the September 23rd, 2019 meeting of the City Council of University City to order at 6:33. Madam Clerk, would you please call the roll?
Councilmember Clay?
Present.
Councilmember Carr?
Present.
Councilmember McMahon?
Here.
Councilmember Hales?
Here.
Councilmember Kusick?
Here.
Mayor Crow?
Here. Please know that Councilmember Smothersen asked to be excused this evening. To my colleagues, you have before you the agenda for tonight's meeting. No one had expressed any changes prior to when we were in the study session. Could I have a motion, please, for the approval of the agenda? So moved by Mr. Kusick, seconded by Mr. McMahon. Any further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. Before you, you have a proclamation that we have already signed for the celebration of the 25th anniversary of the United Place Extended Care, and Council will make sure that we get that to the appropriate parties in order for the event to occur. You have before you the minutes of the study session regarding the police annex from September 9th, 2019. Is there a motion that they be approved? Motion by Ms. Carr, seconded by Mr. McMahon. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. Mr. McMahon.
Thank you, Mayor. I'd like to reappoint Suzanne Greenwald to the CALIP Commission for her second term.
There's a motion. Is there a second? Seconded by Ms. Carr. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. It is my understanding from the city clerk that neither Ms. Russell nor Mr. Harvey can be here this evening. They are both out of town, so we will do their swearing in at another time. To those of you who are in the room who may not have attended a city council meeting previously, we do have sign-in sheets over by the door. If you'd like to sign and speak, you need to fill out a sign-in sheet, and then you will be called. We are now in the first section of citizen participation. Is my understanding that the box is empty and no one has signed up to speak on non-agenda items, so we will keep moving forward. I would like to open the public hearing on annual property tax rates at 6:35. Madam Clerk, are there any requests to speak on this topic?
None at this time.
Thank you. Hearing no one requesting any time to speak, we will close the hearing at 6:35. You have before you the consent agenda item with three items on it: CDBG, final payment of Osage conversion build ambulance, and the Betty Thompson Lifetime Achievement Ceremony and Pledge. Is there a motion to approve the consent agenda? Motion by Mr. Hales, seconded by Ms. Carr. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. Mr. Rhodes.
Honorable Mayor and Council members, tonight we have a brief presentation by our planning director, Clifford Cross. Some of the challenges that we have faced in code enforcement are tied to the software that we currently are using, and that software not meeting our needs. And so I've asked Cliff to share a bit with you about the proposed software and the options that exist within it that we believe would better fit with our current environment. Mr. Cross?
Thank you, Mr. Rose, Honorable Mayor, City Council. Good evening. As good as I am to look at, I'm going to ask you to turn your attention to the screen back there for a brief PowerPoint. And as Mr. Rose had indicated, I'm going to discuss with you tonight our current software, some of my concerns with that software, and some options on how we should move forward with the new software program. So just to kind of give you a background of what we currently utilize, and I know you're all familiar with this, but we do utilize MyGov. It was implemented in April of 2011. It is a web-based program, which means that we utilize it through the web, and that has its pros and cons. For example, when the inspectors go to an inspection and they lose signal, they cannot use their tablet. So that's one of the first concerns that we have with them. But they do utilize a tablet with the built-in library. So when they go identify a violation, as part of an inspection, they automatically hit what we call the library reference number, and it should theoretically put it into the system to identify the specific violation that is ultimately generated in the report. One thing that this software was intended to do, it was part of our permitting process and our code enforcement process, so the primary functions that we utilize with this software, current MyGov software, is it is a tracking system that accounts for when our permits come in, we take the applications, we conduct the plan review, ultimately through all of the inspections, all the way through the final closeout of that specific permit. From a code enforcement end, they go out, they identify the particular violations that you see out of the property maintenance code in Chapter 240 of our municipal code. So they'll go out and they'll identify the violation, generate a notice of violation, and then have a compliance date. When they come back, if it's not in compliance, the system will generate a notice of violation or a ticket, a citation, that ultimately goes to the court. The other thing that we utilize the software for, we utilize it for our occupancy permits. And ironically, we do have a business licensing component in it, but we don't use that. That is actually done through the finance department and the New World system that they use as well, which is a very similar type of system. But the business licensing actually goes through the finance department. So theoretically, when a commercial business comes into, when they apply to establish a business, they come to us, we get the commercial occupancy permit, and then once they pass that and obtain that occupancy permit, then it goes to the business licensing component. The costs associated with this, with the MyGov system have gone up annually at approximately 10% from when it was originally established in 2011. Right now we pay approximately $3,700, $3,720 to be exact, for our software on a monthly basis. And that is really made up of six, what we call six modules, that are about $620 a module. One of the things I'm finding with our current software, as I peel back the onion, is we don't use all those. So we're not getting the bang for our buck. For example, the code enforcement, obviously, we use when we go out and identify the violations and write up the notices and the citations. The GIS is our computerized mapping system. And unfortunately, we don't use that to the extreme that we should. That is the key component that identifies all property owners and geo-references everything back to a specific property. And in a perfect world, that should serve as our way to identify who the individual property owner is on a consistent basis through St. Louis County. We've not done that. I was surprised to find out that system had not been updated since 2011, the day they. And that's a simple process if the software is working right. You bring it in, you take the tax ID number, it links it up to the property. And then when the inspectors identify the violation, they can simply cite the violation, it self-generates a letter. They physically come back now on every violation and have to cross-check it with St. Louis County to determine they're sending the violation to the right individual. So that's a concern. We do use the license and registration subscription. This is where we register our contractors. Permits and inspections, we do that through our building department. The request manager, we do use that somewhat. That's where members of the community can request certain investigations and things like that. The work order subscription, we don't use it at all. That should be the portion where we actually generate a work order report to go cut the grass or do some sort of abatement action. For example, to tow automobiles, we physically fill out a separate piece of paper to, and that should all be handled through the software. And I'm saying this just because I want to show you some of the disconnects on what the problem is with this software, and that it's not a workflow management software. It's a tracking software. It doesn't efficiently perform workflow management. So some of the concerns, real quick, is the scheduling component. This is the biggest concern I have, because when you go out and identify a violation, you have a 10-day compliance period, this should self-generate a follow-up inspection report. It does not. It is up to the inspectors to come back and keep that in mind when that re-inspection needs to take place. And that's where a lot of your disconnects are when you go out and issue conditional occupancy permits with a 60-day compliance period. We're leaving it up to the individual who's been inspected to be on their good faith and honest to call us back and schedule an inspection. It's inefficient. A, it drops the ball. B, it adds to additional work for the administrative staff that shouldn't be there. Notices for staff, it really doesn't provide that notice based on that to reschedule it. And that's a problem that causes some of the issues when you miss stuff. The other concern is because it is solely a web-based system. And as I stated initially, it's when you lose a signal, your tablet becomes useless. Now, I think MyGov is addressing that component like many of the software companies have already done. They actually are having an app that's on there that when you lose the signal, you still have access to your library. You generate the report. Then as you drive by, if you got wireless, you go buy a wireless antenna, it automatically downloads it. The GIS needs to be set up for the efficient use. And as I've indicated, the tax ID number is a problem. Where you find the problem in the building end is the GIS was originally set up for one parcel only, not by address. So basically what it said is the tax ID number for a commercial building may have five addresses in it, but they only get one tax ID number, which means they only get one tax bill to the owner. So when we go out and do an inspection at 525B, it automatically links it up to 525, and it can be difficult to identify the specifics with the permit associated with that individual address within that facility. Updating is a problem. I found that we have limited ability to update administratively in-house. We send a lot of tickets to MyGov to do updates that, quite honestly, we should be able to do in-house. And reporting, this has recently come up, and I go to this because of accountability. And I know one of the things City Manager Rose has talked about is creating a quarterly report. I think the important thing is that we can create a report that we can generate for you, not only on a quarterly basis, but more often if needed. We create that template report and identify what each of you are needing from your wards and generate a specific report that can come out on a routine basis for you. Some of the options that we've looked at, and it sounds like I'm being hard on MyGov. It does a lot of the same things that a lot of these do, it tracks. But where you need to step up a little bit with your software is for the workflow management. Some of the softwares that I've looked at that I think do a little more of that are Tyler Technologies or New World, which we currently utilize through finance. They do have a code enforcement and a community development component along with public safety and everything else. They're the big one. They're one of the biggest around. They've got multiple modules. SmartGov is probably the closest to what we have, but SmartGov steps outside the box a little bit as opposed to the MyGov. It actually has that workflow component, which I'm going to show you as I do a side-by-side comparison. CityGrows, CityWorks, GovPartner, GovPilot, they all do tracking, code enforcement, compliance management, finance, and utility management, and so forth. So this is the comparison of the MyGov to SmartGov. As you'll see, they're very similar. The yellow highlights what has been identified as their primary functions. I think the biggest thing that you'll see here is they're very similar with the exception that SmartGov offers compliance management. That's what we're in the business for, compliance. And to have a software system that doesn't support compliance management is a concern. Taxation and assessment, that goes back to the GIS issues and help to identify what we have in our community and better speak to, so to speak, the GIS and our tracking software. So the goal of any software is to have automated scheduling. That's the key component. Basically have a built-in stop, go, and alert dates. And what I mean by this is that it allows us to create our time frame based on our current code. So say the building code says we got 7 days to review it. That clock starts when that application comes in. It then reminds the inspector you got 3 days, you're down to 2 days, you're down to 1 day. If it doesn't happen, then I'm noticed as a supervisor, and there's the accountability issue. Why are we not performing? That sort of thing. And I think what you'll find is people tend to drop the ball less. And I'm not saying staff is, I'm just saying this is based on the software they have, and it's easy to miss things when you get very busy. The other thing it does it supports us in that we're doing what we're supposed to do. Sometimes you get calls from people saying, why is this permit taking so long? Well, some of it is because their contractor has not responded to the comments, so it's not always on this end, and I want to be able to show that we are performing per our code. And then if the code doesn't meet up to the citizen standards, then we amend it, and then we readjust our software to accommodate it. The reporting and accountability is very important. It needs to be efficient and easy to use for both the public and the staff. One of the things would be the creation of an online system or a kiosk to generate occupancy permits, because we really don't perform any inspections when an individual comes in and gets an occupancy permit, so that should be much easier, a much easier process to verify who the occupants are and to obtain them. And then it has to be administratively controlled. We have to have the ability to make changes on the fly, so to speak, and address and allow our system to evolve to our needs. So moving forward, all the systems are going to address public access, security, permit intake, reporting support, licensing, training, and GIS. Just some are better at it than others. What we need to look for if we do consider a new software package is whether or not you want it as template reporting. I'm saying yes, we're going to want that, but then we're going to want to also have that ability to create future templates and generate individual reports if needed. Scheduling, that's the biggest component. It prevents the drop of the ball, so to speak, and that it's automatically reschedules the inspectors. It lets everybody know when that inspection is, and there's no way to drop the ball. It has the built-in clock, as I had indicated, allows us to continue to stay on track. And it has to be easy to update and in-house. The key is, and I'm going to say this one last time, it's got to be a workflow management system and not a tracking system. With the workflow management, it provides the ability to have accountability, consistency, which should improve our overall efficiency, and our code enforcement side be able to stay on top of the ball a little bit. So what we would need for this, to make this work, we'd have to have approximately 25 licenses. They're all built into one package. That would account for all the inspectors in the community development planning divisions. It would allow for licenses in the Public Works Department, who also review stuff as part of our permit review in terms of land disturbance, floodplain, and things like that. Finance would have to have the ability to use it. The cost in what I'm checking, I mean, they range. Some are lower, some are much higher, but what we would look at is very comparable to what we already pay for. So the annual cost would be about $40,000 a year. Now, one thing you are going to find in a setup of a new system is you're going to have an initial setup cost, and my experience tells me that's going to be about equivalent to 1 year subscription. That could be less, but it could be much greater. It depends on whether you want to bring software in from the old system, do you want to start from day one. Those are things we'll have to look at. We'll have to build a library, and now's the perfect timing because we're talking about adopting new building codes and property maintenance code, so we can start to build that library, which we already are. And then obviously the setup will vary dependent upon the vendor and the library. You know, some vendors like to be more web-based training, some are more hands-on. We're going to look to have someone that's going to be more hands-on to come here and physically help us get everything going. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Question from my colleagues. Mr. Kusick.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Frost. Would there be a way to, if we moved ahead with one of these, and by the way, I'm in favor of doing something like this, would there be a way to monitor it to show its success, or how would you know if this is, if the programs would be successful or not?
Well, after you set it up, a lot of it, you want to make sure you get it set up properly. But with the reporting, I think your identification of compliance rates and time frames will be a good measuring, how long it takes. And it'll also really help is it'll help us identify what the consistency is in obtaining compliance in terms of the resident. They violate. How long does it usually take? 7 to 10 days? Do they need a little more time? So just the ability to generate the report showing compliance rates and time frames, average time frames. Thank you. Is a good benchmark.
Honorable Mayor, if I could add to that, also it's an issue of being accountable, and it enables us to generate reports that we can provide to you as well as to the public with regards to the status of any particular violation or citation that we've issued. So that's the report that Mr. Cross was referring to. Now they're going to need to do that just by hand. This report is just the push of a button.
Yeah, exactly.
One question I have, you mentioned the six different
modules.
I would say the different aspects of the program that we currently have, and you mentioned some were used and some were not used. My question is just going back historically, since we implemented this in 2011, have some of these ever been used or not necessarily?
I'm guessing the work order management has not, just because of what I saw in terms of us using outside contractors to do like towing and so forth. So I question why that was ever asked for, to be honest. Traditionally, you'll find it is if your public works does your abatement and mowing and so forth, theoretically a perfect software should generate the work order at the same time the citation goes out. Once the public works department goes out and mows it, they hit a button, it should self-generate that the billing that goes to finance. Finance sends the bill out. If they don't comply, it should self-generate the potential for a lien and so forth. So I have not seen any evidence that it's ever been used.
Mr. Clay?
Yes, thank you, Mayor Crow. I appreciate the presentation. So we adopt this new software, and the scheduling component is in place, the reminders are generated, so we can follow up in a more timely manner with folks. Hopefully many will comply, certainly if they receive a second notice, but we also realize that there will be several that will not, and we'll need to move to court, we'll need to move to more aggressive action. Can you, or perhaps even the city manager, talk about the infrastructure we're putting in place on the back end? Because as it stands right now, our court system and other systems may not be robust enough to handle the increased volume. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, We've talked about getting a court component to get it filed, but what we would be able to do is when we generate the court case, we'll be able to make sure it's documented in the system and keep on top of it. Now, the other thing I think is very important in noting is if you look at the way our nuisance ordinance is written, it talks about a step after the fact. Say we do the citation, do the fine, get them to court. They don't comply, continue to have the same problem. What we would build into the new system is there are three actions that take place after that to identify a chronic nuisance, and one of them is forced compliance. So we would build it into the system to make sure that the inspector, it's not necessarily going to deal with it in the court, but the inspector stays on top of it and makes sure that nuisance case is followed through on, not only from the violation standpoint in terms of the fine, but from an entire compliance date and the chronic nuisance.
Honorable Mayor, Councilmember, I believe, in addition to what Mr. Cross has indicated, we're looking at adding a second housing docket because we are, Mr. Cross actually is leading the effort to change the approach that we're taking to code enforcement. For several years, it's simply been once we get a call from someone or a complaint, they'll go out and inspect it. And I believe Mr. Cross is moving forward with patrol again so that we will actually be out identifying those violations. So we believe that with that change in structure, that the housing docket will become much more robust, and so we'll need an additional docket. That also is one of the key reasons why we believe we need to fix this problem of follow-up, and that this software package will allow us to do that.
Yeah. And identify our chronic reasons. You know, good reporting of that to address in the long term.
Mr. Hales.
Thank you. Thank you for the presentation. I'm very much someone who's probably used MyGov as a system more than I think all of my colleagues. I've always found it to be a system that was cumbersome, was difficult for residents or contractors to use. And I remember talking to Cliff shortly after he came here six, 7 months ago about all of the ways I was basically disappointed with how that department has been functioning over a number of years. And there, at some point during our conversation, there was sort of that aha moment, and it's the issue that there is no follow-up function in the workflow, which is makes for an incredibly that's a huge hole to have in a system. And when we have the number of issues that we have and problem properties, that's a lot falling through the cracks. So my two questions are, is there one program over another that you're leaning towards? You sort of focus on the top two in the list. And two, what is your optimal timeline?
Probably the best fit for us at this point is a SmartGov, just because it's got a lot of the same components and a lot of the things we need with the scheduling component, the accountability component. And it's probably the price is right. You look at New World it's the top of the line. I've used it, I've set it up, it's amazing, it does everything. But it's expensive, and very expensive in terms of this component. Because you got to buy, it's just not one module. It's just not the finance module. You got to buy 5 and 6 modules. So it becomes very, very expensive. So the answer to your question is SmartGov is probably the most compatible that we have at this point. I think it would be the best fit. Timeline, we're looking. We'd like to have something in place early part of next year so we could get a good amount of training. And have it ready to go by the busy season, so to speak. The other thing that this is going to allow us to do, makes us more proactive. So I think one of the things we've talked about, especially in our development group meeting, are what are our problem properties? This makes it much easier to identify the top 10 properties. And so it'll help us be a little more proactive. So the answer to your question, I would say by spring of 2020, we'd like to have it in place because we're adopting new codes anyway. So we're going to have to build the library and the training and so forth.
Thank you. Oh, sorry, Mr. Clay.
You just mentioned something I wanted to follow up on, and I appreciate that. So when talking about problem properties, I mean, there are some that have been, Councilman Smothers and other of my colleagues have talked about properties that have literally been problems for years. And so we're believing that with adding a second docket, this software, we can really begin to extricate those problem actors who've been that way for years from our community. And that's
the other thing it does is an old trick is to John Jones Trust. It's a violator. 2 weeks later, it's John Jones Brothers Trust, and they run from you. And having the ability to talk to St. Louis County every time they change those, this will be an immediate update, we'll know. And we'll be able to stay on them and link them again. So that'll help with your big companies.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Now move on in the agenda to unfinished business. We have before us Bill number 9392. Madam Clerk, would you please give the second reading?
An ordinance authorizing the City of University City to enter into and execute a contract with St. Louis County, Missouri for vector control services and authorizing and directing the City Manager of University City to enter into, on behalf of said city, a contract with St. Louis County, Missouri for vector control services.
Thank you. May we have the third reading?
An ordinance authorizing the City of University City to enter into and execute a contract with St. Louis County, Missouri for vector control services and authorizing and directing the City Manager of University City to enter into on behalf of said city a contract with St. Louis County, Missouri for vector control services.
Thank you very much. We have a motion to approve 9392. May I have a motion? A motion made by Ms. Carr, seconded by Mr. Hales. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, would you please call the roll?
Councilmember Carr?
Aye.
Councilmember McMahon?
Aye.
Councilmember Hales?
Aye.
Councilmember Cousy?
Aye.
Councilmember Clay?
Aye.
Mayor Crowe?
Aye. Thank you very much. We'll now move forward to new business. Who would like to introduce resolution number 2019-15? Introduced by Mr. Cousy. Is there a second? Seconded by Mr. McMahon. Is there a discussion regarding resolution 2019-15? Hearing none. Those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. Thank you very much. Now, I've got one more. Who would like to introduce bill number 9393? Mr. McMahon, would we please have the first reading of bill number 9393?
An ordinance terminating the University City Commission on Human Relations.
Thank you very much. That concludes our new business for the evening. Any council reports or comments to be made during this particular section prior to our public, our citizen comments? Mr. Clay.
I do like to report on the senior commission meeting. It took place, I believe it was last Monday. Linda Taylor of Parks and Recreation was at the meeting. Senior Services now resides under her leadership. So she was there to talk a little bit about the commission, about some of her vision and the thinking of the way forward for the senior commission. We reviewed the results of the senior survey that was conducted, so that was enlightening to understand what they get a little bit of the pulse of our seniors and the kinds of things that they're needing. One of the big takeaways from that survey was the need for information on resources. We know the city is limited in what it can do specifically, but I do think where we can provide information to our seniors in particular, but others, I would imagine, about resources, things that are available throughout St. Louis County and the region, we should make every effort to do so. So there was robust conversation about the role of the city in providing information to our seniors. And there was also an update on Make a Difference Day. For those who are not aware, it's an opportunity for Ucidians to help do minor repair, light kind of work on homes for seniors in our community. It will still exist. There's some structural things happening with how it will be administered and the city's role in that, but looking forward to getting more information about how we can get involved in that.
Any other comments? Hearing none, we will move forward into the second citizen participation. We have two citizens who have requested to speak to each of the speakers. Please, would you come to the microphone, give your name and address, and you are limited to 5 minutes for your topic. Our first request to speak comes from Mary Weber.
Good evening, Mayor, council members. I have a question which you may be able to answer and would keep me on point here. Do you have speed limit signs posted in the loop from the roundabout all the way to Skinner? And where does the city take over for posting of speed limit signs?
Ms. Weber, we have our director over Public Works that's present. Sinan, if you wouldn't mind standing up. I'm sure Sinan would be happy to share with you where we have those posted and where our responsibility ends for posting.
Okay, because it's extremely limited. And I won't take up any more time since he's here. I'm going to talk with
him. And can you give your name and address?
Oh, I'm sorry. Completely forgot. Yes, Mary Weber, 7250 Orchard Avenue.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Sinan will address your questions. Our next request to speak is Steve Glicker.
Good evening. Steve Glicker, 7750 Blackberry.
Thank you to Mr. Rose for connecting me to Mr. Cross. I had a discussion with him Friday afternoon. He presented to me his plan and strategy moving forward. We had a great conversation. I shared some of my concerns with him. And hopefully we're going to see some good things come out of that. But I also wanted to reply to a couple comments that were made at the last meeting. Unfortunately, Mr. Smotherson's not here, but I'm sure he'll watch, about his comment on due process. I realize there's due process, but out of the 55 violations that I forwarded to you this week, I'll have you know that 41 of those are 16 months old. So due process, in his explanation, I think was a load. Instead of him commenting on due process and dodging, how about a message to the people that have to live next door to them? 16 months. What if they're trying to sell their house? What if that's, you know, that's the area, their income that they can afford? They've made progress on their house, and they have to look at that every day. The whole neighborhood. It reflects on all of us. And Mr. McMahon, you described very vividly your, I guess, the escapades of everyone calling and bestowing high praise on the great job and how well it works in the Third Ward, and that they received the same as everyone else. I don't know if you looked at those pictures. 16 months, and then you describe the process. Call the hotline. That's the only link in the chain I missed. You said, if that doesn't work, get a hold of the councilman. Two of them. If that doesn't work, contact the staff. They're involved. If that doesn't work, city manager. If that doesn't work, by all means, come up here and tell us about it, and we'll step up and provide the customer service. 16 months. And that neighborhood still looks the same. So who am I supposed to believe? Due process? The great results that you've gotten? People from the Third Ward are calling you? Why? Because it's not being done? So hopefully Mr. Cross can get something done, because you've sure avoided this. And you've created quite a hill for him to clean up. So, good luck, Mr. Cross.
That is our last request to speak. Do members of council have comments to make prior to adjourning this evening? Mr. Cusick.
Thank you, Mayor. I would just like to thank everyone that came out and supported University City in Bloom yesterday for the plain air art event and the garden tour. The gardens were all wonderful. There were many spectacular gardens on that we were able to visit. I would like to note one particular garden, and that was the high school students' vegetable garden that they have. I believe it's at Brittany Wood School. I was quite impressed with that and hope to see. They've only put that together in the last 8 months, I think. And I would like to hopefully see them doing a lot better over there, because the students were very enthusiastic and very proud of what they've done over there, and they should be applauded for that. And then also thank you for everyone that came out here to the community center yesterday and supported UCity in Bloom and bought artwork and also provided their gardens for us to come and visit. Thank you.
Any other comments? Mr. Clay.
Yes, thank you, Mayor Crow. Very quickly, clearly we are in a different facility this evening. Some of you may be aware that we have had issues with the elevator at our city hall. It is the only elevator at our city hall. And unfortunately, for a number of our residents, it's become unusable as a practical matter for conducting city business. Given we are in this place, I would, as we go forward and think about our facilities and our civic plaza, that we bear in mind all our facilities, because this I think says to me in some way that we've got a city hall that could really use some attention. So I would just ask that we continue to think comprehensively. I believe that's the desire of everyone, to think as broadly as we can about what we do next with our facilities, but I think this kind of serves as a reminder to keep that in the forefront. Thank you.
Any other comments from my colleagues? Hearing none, motion to adjourn. Motion by Mr. Hales, seconded by Ms. Carr. Those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
We are adjourned. Thank you.